I don't often cook, but when I do, I make French toast. And if you haven't had my French toast, I'm not sure you've really even experienced Easter. New life invigorating into you because of the secret recipe of cinnamon and vanilla, heavy cream and eggs, mixed with the perfect blend, puffing that bread up, and then if your choice of maple syrup or powdered sugar on top. But it really does come down to the chef. I can give you the ingredients, but can you make the French toast is the question. It's one of the few skills I have in the kitchen. But anyways, the idea here is we all know the ingredients for French toast or for other recipes, but can we actually make those things? Can we actually cook those things and do it well? Scripture today that we have heard and we're going to talk about for a few moments here is well known. And it, again, talks about making something. It says, make disciples. How do we make disciples? It's an interesting phrase. In fact, if you look back at the Greek, which most of you will not, but it's part of my job, it actually says, go disciple. It doesn't say make, which I'm kind of glad for, because we really can't make disciples. We go and we disciple. So let's talk about what does that mean? Well, what's interesting, right in that passage, some of the ingredients are right there. And you might sometimes not hear it, because all you hear is some of the language that you've heard. But right in that text, as well as other places, some of the disciples had faith and believed, and some doubted. And it's funny that Matthew puts that there. This is the end of his gospel, his account of following Jesus. What does that mean? What were his teachings? What happened during his life? And then this is the resurrected Christ who has come back for a moment to give some final counsel to those disciples. And Matthew includes this. Some folks had faith and believed, and others were doubting. Which, again, it's always interesting to me, because most of us would say, if I could just see Jesus, or if I could just meet God, then I would believe. Well, there's lots of proof right in the Gospels that lots of people got to see Jesus do a lot of neat things, and they still doubted. They still doubted. As I shared that story this morning about being stranded on the highway and some of the things that happened during that stressful journey for us, in hindsight, I began to see kind of the miraculous things as I shared with you this morning that my spiritual glasses helped me to see. Because it was very stressful. My wife and I were at each other's throats. We're struggling with this person on the phone. We're like, well, what are we going to do? You know, all that stuff that happens in the middle of life. We had moments of faith and some serious moments of doubt. Things were going to work out for us just yesterday evening. And so one of the ingredients, I think, is to be honest about our journey. People are not looking for highfalutin concepts or, as they say, white tower theology. They just want to hear from you, like, the practical things of how your faith experience happens in your life. And as I shared that story about yesterday, for me, again, it was, you know, I guess maybe the main thing was listening to my child, right? Sometimes the Bible does say that the children will often tell us the truth in the midst of our chaos. And then if we do these things, and then one of the final things, the promise that comes in this passage is, and I will be with you always. So we're not alone on this journey, and you and I are not alone in this thing called the church. Again, yesterday, stranded by the highway, I was not alone, even though I felt alone for a few minutes, as people are just whipping by. God was with us. So there's some of the ingredients, I believe, and what does it mean to disciple? We're all just looking for how other people are living and kind of watching them and learning from them. And sometimes we get the chance, the opportunity to see God at work in people's lives. But looking at this passage, I do want to kind of take it back. It's sometimes this passage has been put in the eyes or the phraseology of military orders. General Jesus on the hill, authoritatively barking commands. I've been to a lot of seminars, right? Most of you who have different types of, well, you're in school, you're in seminars all the time. But even as a minister, I've been to several conferences, and I've been to some where they put it in military garb. I even had a man up front in fatigues, putting the whole Christian story within military context. That we have these orders, that we are sent with these marching orders in a military style from Captain Jesus. And in a way, Christianity has been co-opted into that mindset. And of course, in the last few years, it's even gotten worse with the idea of Christians also need to carry around semi-automatic weapons as well. And in living in this lovely, beautiful country, where we are very thankful for our freedoms, we forget how the rest of the world lives. And what does it mean to be indigenous people living in a land and depending on God, and to have people come to us talking about the Christian God? Just this past week, my family and I went to Colonial Williamsburg. Lillian thought she was on vacation. It was actually school, homeschool. No, it was fun. Over there in Virginia, I chased some spring weather, brought some back with us. But we got to see what they call the triangle there of Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, where some of the final battles happened to free us from the, at that time, the British Empire. And it's really neat. It's great history. Thankfully, a part of it was also experiencing some of the Native American context that was there before we got here. But part of the history there that they have in the museums and from the people is when Europeans brought Christianity, they brought it in the style of European Christianity. And what does that mean when you bring the gospel to people who are in a different place, living different ways? In that we brought not just our Bible with us, but we also brought, well, you need to dress this way, you need to have the organ, and you need to have everything the way we do it if you're going to worship God properly. So some of that was a stark reminder again about how Christianity has been co-opted in that way, that you somehow dominate people with this religion. You force them to do it your way. And that's not what Jesus was saying with that final word of inspiration, go and make disciples. So we've lost a little bit of that because of some of that, taking that statement. And by the way, the Great Commission, this is often called, is, you know, somebody's phrase they stuck in there. That's not literally in the Bible, that phrase, the Great Commission. So this phrase and this passage has been misunderstood and maybe even misrepresented, maybe even misapplied. How do we make or go and disciple others? Well, I looked up a neat group that I follow often. They're called the Sojourners, and it's a very progressive Christian movement that's been around for a long time. And as things have been happening in this country over the last 8 years or so, they came up with a statement to kind of take back the gospel, if you will, from this type of misunderstanding of, you know, we're going to force the gospel that we are the dominant culture, it's this way or no way, follow us, we've got it. And so they said, we believe Jesus, when he tells us to go into all nations, that our churches and our nations are a part of an international community whose interests always surpass national boundaries. The most well-known verse in the New Testament, for God so loved the world, is true. God so loves the world and all of its inhabitants. And so therefore, it is not about American Christianity, but all of the world is loved by God. We can be patriots and love our country, but we need to reject any idea of nationalism that is connected with our faith. We reject domination rather than stewardship of the earth's resources toward genuine global development that brings human flourishing for all of God's children. Serving our own communities is essential, but the global connections between us are undeniable. So global poverty, environmental damage, violent conflict, weapons of mass destruction, and deadly diseases in other places affect all of us. That's just a brief quote from the Sojourners. Very powerful statement. So as Matthew shares with us, as Jesus gives some of these final words to the disciples, what does it mean to faithfully follow these words? The church has been sent into the world to help people find and discover God's love, maybe to discover God already active in their life and just opening people's eyes to what the Spirit is already doing. Also acknowledging, helping people see. So it's not just about your story, but maybe some people don't realize all that the Spirit has already been doing in their life. So I found some other neat stories this week that talked about how this verse has often been given to the clergy, that we, these people who are ordained, and are that we have to go out and follow Matthew 28 and bring the rest of you with us. That's not true either. It's some neat churches have been looking at how does this verse about going into the world and representing Christ affect the everyday lay person. And so something I'd like to think about doing, and this couple of churches are doing, is helping people see how God's calling is in all of your work every day and in students, in schools, etc. Bringing what we might call the sacred and the secular together. So for instance, Pastor John Harris in New York City, Central Presbyterian Church, once a year he recognizes the vocations of different people. And he takes a month and he has different folks come up, whether they be finance people, lawyers, artists, healthcare workers. He brings them up front and has them talk about their work for a few moments and has the church recognize this as God's calling. Isn't that neat? Similarly, Pastor Ryan Beadle in Bellevue Presbyterian Church in Washington has done the same thing. And he takes it a step further where he has everyone stand up and he commissions them in their life to be disciple makers in their jobs, to recognize that God has called them to be cooks and secretaries and whatnot. And whoever you are, wherever you are, God is at work in your life. It's not just the pastors. Pastor John Tyson of Trinity Grace Church, also in New York, says, there are people who labor all week long. And meanwhile, we bring up missionaries and we pray for them and we send them off into the world and sometimes into international places. And that is awesome. But all of us are commissioned and sent out wherever we are. Have you ever felt like that you are a missionary in your chosen industry? And of course, let's recognize the idea of remote work. You remember remote work was an option when COVID started, and now it's become not an option, because companies began to realize that the overhead of maintaining office space was easy to let go of if we could let people work at home. It's worked out well for some and not for others. But all of these callings, God's work in the world. The thing about the remote thing is that it can be a little isolating, and then you're no longer in the office or out in the daily life, and so you don't get to do and be with the people that you used to be. So you have to figure out other places to plug in if you're working at home. To be famous, Boris Pasternak says, so plunge yourself into obscurity and conceal there your tracks. But be alive. Alive your full share. Alive until the end. Those are neat words, and I think he's kind of reminding us that sometimes we don't feel like we get the status or the vision or the recognition, and we're just quietly going about our daily lives, not really seeing or recognizing all that God is doing through us and with us in these little places that no one sees us go to. Long story short, what makes someone a discipler seems to be if you are recognizing who you are in God's eyes and that you are already sent and prepared and gifted and maybe already doing things without recognizing this commission that has come to you. When I was in seminary, there was a professor who made some comments in class, and one of the words that we struggle with in this passage that has different translations is the word, a couple of words, authority and orders. Those are definitely translated into more of a westernized culture with those words. Again, this is not authoritarianism or, you know, colonialism. And what he says is perhaps what we're looking at in the translation is a word that's not real, but a better translation, he said, was follow ability. A good leader is someone that people want to follow. A disciple is someone people want to imitate, be like, follow ability. Do you have followability? Again, you don't have to be an extrovert to have followability. It's the little things, little decision each day that makes you look and act like a disciple of Jesus. No one can make anyone follow Jesus. So again, we don't make or create disciples. We just go and be disciples. I learn this the hard way every day with my child. She is now 11. And I'm realizing more and more I can't make her do anything. I can loudly suggest, get dressed, it's time for school. And she can make it hard by slowly doing that. And then the consequences of hair not getting brushed or breakfast not being very good or just not being really ready. I can say, let's go outside and pick the weeds, or come here and do that. Can we do that next week? I'm going to hold you to it. We will do it next week. Anyway, this is true about anything and anyone. We can't manipulate people. We can't control them or make them who we want them to be. But we can try to be people that they watch, that maybe they want to emulate with how we live. So let's talk about this church in closing here, and then I'm going to invite Jeremy Schrader to come forward. This title today is Making Impact. And we've been asking people, and I'm still asking if you'd like to share, how has Westside Church impacted your life? How has this church been a blessing to you? And so some people have been sharing stories that we're writing in our weekly emails, and I invite you to look at those if you have not seen them. Also, I'd love to have you email me some of your own stories. It can be very brief. My kids grew up here. They went through Sunday school. This church has always been faithful. I love the outreach here. It can be pretty simple. I'm not looking for supernatural language or anything like that. But let's talk about the impact of Westside Church. I've been here just under 2 years. And the thing I've always been impressed with about Westside United Methodist Church, I've known about this place for quite a while, is the service and the outreach that they've been doing here for years, that we've been doing here for many, many years. In a few minutes, we're going to learn about an organization we support locally called Growing Hope. We've invited their executive director. You're going to hear in a few moments during our offering talk about that. We're supporting them for the month of April. Out in the hallway, it's time to sign up for Alpha House, local family shelter. Coming up soon this summer and into the fall, we send teams out to work with Habitat for Humanity. Coming this summer, we'll do some kind of vacation Bible school. Not sure what that will be called or how it looks, but we always do some kind of kids outreach. Of course, every Sunday, we have Sunday school. We have youth group opportunities. We have camps that we send kids to. We have a lovely and wonderful, amazing music program. Soon we will have a video, if you missed it or if you want to watch it again, of Good Friday and Easter Sunday, and we'll have those on the website. We'll let you know when that comes up. We have Bible studies ongoing almost year-round. We have reading groups, book study groups. And if you didn't know, this building, we like to call it a community center. Westside is a lovely place here on 7th Street with a lot of opportunity for people to utilize our facilities that were faithfully built here. And now we get to share them. Just to kind of remind you of who's here, Glacier Way Cooperative Preschool has been here for several years, if not, I think almost 20 years, right? And they're in the education wing over here. We now have a kids dance program called Spinning Dot there in our building now. On a regular basis, University of Michigan students have their recitals right here. Lovely performances that you're all welcome to attend. School groups use our facilities for meetings. Recently, we had a neat group called Hands Across the Water. It's a local agency that does foster care and adoption, LGBTQ friendly. They are now using our building for meetings as well. And after COVID, thankfully, more and more people are calling to utilize Westside's facilities. Outreach that happens around the year here. We recently, for Easter, we sent funds to the World Central Kitchen. We also supported the Jewish Family Services. Recently, we have supported food gatherers, a local food bank. We sent a team to Costa Rica. We support UMCOR, which is the United Methodist Committee on Relief. They respond to disasters and wars, etc. We have a pastor's emergency fund, which is not for me when I'm stuck on the side of the road, but what it is, it's for people who come into our building on a regular basis looking for help with food and clothing and utilities. We support, speaking of that, House by the Side of the Road with clothing donations and household items. We support the Delana Shelter downtown regularly. And I can't even remember all the places that we support, but we do a lot of outreach, which I'm so proud to be a part of a church that does that. How does all that happen? That happens because we are building a community here. We're building a community of folks who gather together with our faith and our doubts, trusting that God is with us. And we've experienced God's love, and we want to share that with others in very honest and gentle ways. With that being said, I'd like to invite Jeremy Schrader to come forward. He's one of our folks who's going to share about the impact of Westside Church and his family's life.
Thanks, Adam. I'm just struck with how the Spirit works and how God works sometimes, because this was just a perfect encapsulation of the way I feel that my faith and Westside has affected my family lately. And discipleship is a major word that comes to mind. So when asked to share with you our testimony about how faith and Westside has affected us, I took a hard swallow as I realized this was going to force me to contend publicly with my feelings. And if you know me and have seen me share publicly with you in the past, you know that literally every time I've done this, I've cried a little bit. This is not a person who's particularly adept at speaking publicly about his feelings. So naturally, in some spare time at work, I went to ChatGPT and told it to give me 3 paragraphs on the subject of how my faith in Westside United Methodist Church at Ann Arbor have impacted my faith. So one of the somewhat eyebrow-raising phrases is, quote, "The welcoming embrace of this congregation has blessed me with a family beyond blood." Okay. "The sermons, hymns, and communal prayer during worship services rejuvenate my soul each week, fortifying my resolve to live a life reflective of Christian values." It's not wrong. So I said, okay, well, shorten this to 1 paragraph for me. So ChatGPT did. And I learned from that at Westside United Methodist Church in Ann Arbor, my faith has found a nurturing home where the sense of community and shared service strengthens my spiritual journey. So I think basically what I got from ChatGPT was a admissions letter to Bob Jones University. But in all seriousness, our family started attending Westside maybe a little under 2 years ago. I really can't remember anymore, but it's something around that time frame. And on our first visit here, we met Jim and Ellen. We met Doug and Sue. We met Dwayne and Marilyn. We met Jim. Is it Marietta? Is that your last name? I think that's right. Yeah, Marietta. Yeah. Whom else? We met Liz, Miles, Evelyn, and Victoria Putnam. We met Margie. We met so many people who, it was clear immediately, just enjoyed being here together and recognized in us that maybe we'll enjoy it too. Maybe not. And if Westside isn't our thing, if it's not our way of experiencing Christ with a community, then that's fine. But we met people who, it was obvious, enjoyed being here together, enjoying each other's company, maybe not making disciples of each other, but helping form each other's discipleship. So it took a few more visits to recognize that this really is a community that wants to thoughtfully engage with what it means to live out Christian faith. We share our triumphs and joys together. We share our fears, doubts, and sorrows. And I say doubts like that. Sharing doubts is very important to me as someone who doesn't always know what Jesus Christ means to my faith. I know that I'm in a group of people where I feel comfortable sharing that, and I know many of you feel that way. I feel that way all the time, and it's just such a joy to be part of a community where I know other people have felt that. We've wrestled with our faith. I guess I didn't get to see Pastor Sam's sermon on Jacob last week, but I recognize in all of you that you have wrestled with your faith, and you keep coming back to continue to wrestle together and help make disciples of each other and of me and Heather and our kids. We are together sharing and learning how to live out a Christian faith in 2024 in Ann Arbor, which is, there are a lot of layers to how to do that, and we're doing it. It's this balance of a healthy Christian community that I so value here at Westside, where when we are called to love the Lord our God with all our heart, our soul, our mind, and our strength. Now, I'm particularly biased toward the mind side of things. Again, I'm not great at engaging with my feelings publicly. So I tend to deny and eschew the way of interacting with God with my heart and my soul. And this group of people does such a great job of helping me maintain a balance in my faith life. So I'm very thankful for that. Also, I'm reminded of, I always talk about Micah 6:8, where we learn, the lead up to Micah 6:8 is like, what can I do for God? There are all these grandiose things that we might want to try to do for God. But Micah reminds us that, no, you know what God requires of you: to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And once again, I see in front of me a group of people who is happy to together work toward that balance of doing justice, of being merciful and kind, and to practicing humility in our discipleship. So I'm very thankful for that. So Westside has impacted me in a very dramatic way, to helping me find balance in what it means to be Christian here in Ann Arbor, despite, again, I'll repeat, not really knowing exactly what it means to be Christian, what Jesus Christ really means. And again, being in an environment where I feel comfortable saying that publicly, it's just so important and valuable to me. So I'm excited as we move forward to see, you know, what this church has in store, what we all have in store for each other, what it has in store for my family and I and for my kids, to pulling us toward this more full and rich vision and version of what it means to be Christian here in Ann Arbor today. So thank you very much.
With that, I will say amen and invite you to join us in our hymn.